What should we try next?
I was excited to continue my experimentation. Water corruption had yielded no effect, and I was loath to try Infernal. We moved on to Earth, where our effort rewarded us by granting a new ability.
It grew armor,
I breathed, awed by the form of the new basher. Nearly double the size of its fellows, the thick muscles and tough bones were now also hidden under plates of what appeared to be stone. This could be considered a tanking unit, the member of a group able to take the most damage. A tank-type unit was fairly common. For instance, the knights in the groups that came into the dungeon, with their thick armor and big ol' shields, were a good example of a tank. By having one of these as a mob, I could have my other mobs focus on attacking and hope that this creature would remain the main target of adventurers because of its size and formidable appearance. Next, we tried adding the essence of fire to the pattern of a basher, but each time the basher would scream and spasm on the floor until it died. A few tests of this determined that no matter how diluted I made the combination of fire taint and essence, I could not make a successful prototype. With some trepidation, we decided to move on to Infernal Taint, as we were running low on options, and Infernal was the most plentiful in my arsenal, after Earth Corruption, of course. This we were more careful with, going very slowly so we didn't accidentally create an uncontrollable demonic animal. Again, stopping at F-Rank 6, we watched as the animal started panting heavily. It began shuddering, almost having a seizure. I watched its bones grow longer and denser, becoming harder than even the Earth-type basher. The nub of bone on its head grew, expanding longer and tapering into a sharp point. Its growth slowed, but it had gained a dark, solid horn. The muscles on its back legs strengthened, though fully grown, its size was roughly equivalent to the air-tainted basher. I was a bit let down. The last creation felt so anticlimactic. Well, it got a horn, but no ability.
No, it did! Look at the horn!
Danny shouted. I looked and examining it, saw. Hardened, armor-piercing.
How is that an infernal ability? Wait, how is that on its bones? I've seen something similar, but only a few weapons.
Danny toyed with a few ideas, finally conceding.
No idea. Maybe it combined with its own natural essence to produce it?
I had already turned my mind to the next attempt I was going to make.
I guess. Well, shall we try Celestial too?
Not waiting for her response, I turned my attention to the next basher and began the process. I tried to regulate the celestial taint moving through it, but unlike the forceful joining that had been obvious with the other types of taint, this basher absorbed celestial taint like a sponge. Instead of a 1-to-5 ratio like the others, this type ended up gaining closer to 1 part celestial, 3 parts essence, significantly more than the others. Cutting the flow of essence off at the F-Rank 6, I watched as the basher twitched, absorbing the essence flowing into it. Unlike the obvious pain the others had gone through, this one almost seemed to be writhing in pleasure. The fur along its body turned blonde, nearly golden. Its body actually shrank a bit, unlike the others who had more than doubled in size. Its muscles reconfigured, gaining fast twitch muscle, good for sprinting and fast reactions, whereas the others had gained tough, slow twitch muscle for endurance and strength. The nub of bone on its head turned pure white with golden threads moving through it, looking like a vein of gold in a slab of marble.
Well, it looks adorable,
Danny cooed. I whooped.
It has an ability! Mend. Does that heal?
We obviously had different priorities.
I think so. It may actually be a stronger version of the healing ability we've seen. It'll likely take a lot of energy to heal, so I don't think it'll be able to do it very often. I mean, look how tiny and cute you are.
She was talking to the bunny now, who rubbed at his face with his front paws.
Cute and resource intensive.
It took a lot of celestial corruption to make. Way too much to be a common mob, and I doubt it will be a great fighter. Of all the taint we had accumulated, the smallest amount we had was by far celestial. Well, I may not be able to make these common mobs, but let's see what they can do. I linked all of my new bashers up in the room and made them race to the end of the room and back in a test of speed. The earthen armor-covered one was obviously the slowest. He also could not turn very well at speed, as shown when he rammed into the wall and shattered a large chunk of granite before turning around with no apparent damage.
"Damn!"
Danny whistled. The air and infernal type were near matched for speed, the infernal winning simply by the length of its horn. In terms of top speed, none of them were able to match the celestial type. It took off, bounding to the end, jumped off the far wall to conserve momentum, and returned to its spot before the others had made it to the first wall. When it stopped, it sank to the floor, exhausted and panting heavily. This little guy was a sprinter, not a marathon runner. It was almost time to reopen the dungeon, so while I wanted to run some more experiments, we needed to finish up. "So what do you think, Danny? I'm leaning toward boosting a version of the armored one to F-rank 9, making him my new boss. The others I can make mostly common mobs, especially Earth-type small armored ones."
"Sounds good. And how about we place Warrens in the boss room for the healing ones to hide? Then, when the boss gets hurt too bad, they do a sprint by healing, returning to hiding to avoid dying. Then you won't need to spend more essence to make new ones, and we can surprise groups who thought the fight was over."
"Perfect! Oh, Danny, what would I do without you?" I wildly overreacted, pretending she was even more helpful than she really was. She was ready for my snarkiness today, unfortunately.
"You'd likely still be gazing lovingly at Moss."
"Ouch! Fair enough, cruel overlord." We got ready to create the new and enhanced boss, marshaling our thoughts and readying my essence while we discussed the best way to proceed. After absorbing all of the new bashers and carefully studying each pattern, I was prepared to begin. Applying the ideas of the last few hours, I made a new armored basher and began to flood him with essence and corruption, literally the energy of the heavens and the earth. He began to grow again, and I applied more earth taint than I had originally planned. Slowly growing, he passed the F-rank 8. At F-rank 9, his armor fell off and new plates began to form. Collecting from the nearby granite, particles flew to join into the new, thick plating. The grinding rock segmented, allowing for greater mobility, while the multitude of plates themselves formed piecemeal as hexagonal chunks, which would make sharpened weapons skitter off without finding purchase. At the end, this monster was near the size of what Danny called a black bear. Over waist height on a human, the creature weighed in at close to 300 pounds. Due to the amount of time and essence I had devoted to it, I decided that I would need to wait until someone killed it before absorbing the pattern. I saw that it had a new ability, but its aura was strong enough that without absorbing the boss, I could not tell what it did. Placing hidey holes around the boss room, I directed a few golden rabbits to them, making sure they could help or escape from any part of the room. Then, to fill out the second floor, I made roving squads of the improved bashers and named them. The small earth types I named Smashers, the air types Oppressors, and the infernal Impalers. The boss got an actual name, Armored Basher, Rail, while the golden ones had a slightly different flavor to their moniker, Glitterflit. That one was Danny's suggestion. I made squads of two bashers, two oppressors, and one impaler each. I placed a few thorn-shooting banes along the tunnel ceiling to make people look up instead of looking for traps, then interspersing the rooms with several squads each and a few banes for ranged attacks. I was as ready to reopen as I could be. Confirming with Danny, I drew the ruined door into the ceiling for later use, then settled in to wait for the next group foolish enough to attack us.
15. After a normal morning routine of breakfast and boasting, they adjourned to the dungeon as per usual. To their great shock, the entrance was gone, blocked by a slab of stone that was obviously not a natural part of the surrounding landscape.
"What is this?" Dale murmured, poking at the obstacle.
"I'm unsure, but there is an energy moving in it that I am unfamiliar with." Craig sounded exceedingly confused.
"Nothing for it, men. Let's alert the guildmaster."
They climbed up the stairs, quickly moving toward the large tent housing the upper echelon of the guild. They had to walk past the area which had been converted to glass. The rays of sunshine bursting from the glorious dawn glimmered off the reflective surface with awe-inspiring intensity. They arrived at the tent, quickly being granted an audience with a harried-looking guildmaster.
"What? What's the matter? Why aren't you in the dungeon?"
Frank growled at a clerk as she dropped a stack of paperwork on his desk.
"That's what we're here about, Frank. Dungeon closed. There is a big old slab of rock in the entryway, and it has some kind of energy moving in it I can't decipher."
Craig dropped into an unfamiliar cant of dialogue as he talked to Frank. This got Frank's attention, as Craig was a well-known expert of all things essence. He was widely thought to be the next man that would be moving into the mage rank, great interest to the guild, as the mage rank was something that was attained usually twice a decade or so. If Craig didn't understand whatever the issue was, it could be very serious.
"All right. I'll send you a spotter. Go check it out when he gets here, then have him report back to me. Actually, one of you come tell me what it is. They would stop to write a report for me to read. As if I didn't have enough to do."
He scribbled out a note and sent a runner to find the specialist. A spotter was a mage-ranked person who specialized in determining the hidden properties of an unknown item. They could read inscriptions, energy flows, and had a deep understanding of history and the lore of most abilities that had been seen before. They were often assigned to scout teams that helped determine when people, places, or items had gone down a dark path. Less well-liked, the church had their own version called Inquisitors.
"A spotter?" Hans whined. "Do we have to work with one of those stuck-up bastards?"
"Nope! You could take the day off of dungeon hearing and help me out instead. We could use someone to dig a new latrine. Ours is near overflowing."
Frank deadpanned with a gimlet stare.
"Oh, look at the time. It is work with the spotter o'clock,"
Hans chattered cheerfully as he made his escape from the room.
"Mm-hmm,"
Frank grunted. He waved the rest of them off.
"Let me know how it goes now. Shoo! The portal mages will be arriving here in the next few days, and I need to find a suitable location for them to set up. Good call giving that lot to the church, Dale. I hadn't thought about a possible monster breakout."
Dale, feeling a bit down about not dungeon diving this morning, brightened a bit upon hearing these words. Craig noticed his emotional shift and shook his head. Sometimes it was easy to forget that Dale was so young. They stepped out of the tent, at a loss for what to do for the next while. Walking around, they played a game of notice some random detail, a way to train their perception and attention to detail by looking at all the new people that had arrived. Not all of them were guild members. Quite a few were simple treasure hunters, while others were people interested in joining the guild.
"Half of these fools will be dead in 6 months," Craig muttered darkly.
Dale was taken aback by the normally good-spirited man's sudden mood shift.
"Why would you say that, Craig? They all look decently strong to me. Look at that massive guy. He looks like he could throw me over the mountain."
"I forgot that you are looking with just your eyes all the time. I think you are ready to learn how to use your essence, at least a bit,"
Craig decided aloud, ignoring the surprised looks of the men around him. They stopped, and the other men in his group, Hans, the near-silent Josh, and the ranger Steve, now looked upset at Craig's words.
"You think he is ready?"
Steve quietly questioned, one of the very few times Dale had heard him speak.
"He's been progressing quickly,
much faster than we were able to when we became cultivators. At this pace, if we can get back into that dungeon soon, he'll be breaking into the D rank within 6 months to a year, Craig told the group. They looked at Dale with surprise, then all seemed to simultaneously squint at him, nodding after a moment.
Looks like it.
Yup. Unfair, pouted Hans.
Dale looked around.
I know that is good. Why are you acting like that is strange?
Normally it takes quite a few years to get out of the F rankings, Dale. You got very lucky. A solid group and a good dungeon to train in, Craig informed him. Listen, it's time for you to learn how to be, well, actually useful to us instead of a liability that just so happens to kill a few rabbits each day.
Dale winced.
Ow, my pride. I thought I was doing better than that.
You are. I was exaggerating to make a point. So far, though, you have been doing everything with just the strength of your body. When you can use your essence to supplement your weak points, life can only get better for you, Craig explained. Time to let you in on a poorly guarded secret. You have a key spiral. But have you found your meridians?
Dale shook his head, knowing the lesson would progress faster if he didn't pretend to know things he didn't.
Sit down and get comfy. Good. Now feel your center.
Dale focused, and was soon able to perfectly see his small key spiral.
You are looking at the spiral. Good. Instead of looking at just your spiral, look around. Look in any other direction. Find the walls that are holding your spiral in this place, the boundaries that contain your essence.
Dale was easily able to follow these instructions, easily feeling his limits as they were so small currently. Craig's voice was soft as he continued directing his protege.
Find the holes in the wall, the empty spaces that move further into your body, and extend some essence to these places. Don't be scared when your essence begins flowing on its own.
The essence, not used to doing anything but spinning under Dale's control, initially was too slippery for Dale's mind to grasp. He had done a very good job of purifying, and the thread eluded his grip for several long minutes. Finally, of course, he managed to hold it, then was able to extend the essence to the hole, but missed several times, bouncing it off the wall. This was as difficult to him as threading a small needle to sew with. Slowly, carefully, he poked the thread into the hole, succeeding this time. Thankful that Craig had warned him, Dale was still startled at the rapid pace the essence unspooled from his center into the meridian.
Good. Now wait a moment before you try anything else. Follow the thread with your thoughts as it moves throughout your body. Also, you may notice this hurt a bit, but it should be nowhere near as painful as the last time we made you do things with essence.
Craig chuckled a bit. The thread left his center and traveled directly toward his heart. It impacted with the force of a hammer. For a few moments, Dale's eyes boggled as he clutched his chest. The thread looped around his heart in a tight weave, until the organ had the thread moving through every part, tissue, artery, and capillary. The purified essence moved onward, leaving the weave intact as it continued. The pain subsided in its wake, and his heart began to beat regularly again. Flowing downward, the thread hit his lower intestine with less force and only created a weave in a small area before moving up to his lungs. It split just before them, and impacted them both at dangerous speeds, enough so that he coughed up a bit of blood and lost his breath. The weave placed on the heart repeated itself, forming tightly around both lungs, making it hard to breathe until the pattern completed. The split thread moved up his arms until it wrapped around the little finger and began its travel down a slightly altered path until it found another hole in the walls of his center, rejoining his key spiral from an unexpected angle. Dale opened his eyes and wiped a bit of blood from his mouth. He felt calm and rested, heart beating powerfully while he breathed more deeply than he could ever remember doing. The sense of calm lasted only until he looked up into the expectant eyes of his groupmates, who had looks of relief on their faces.
"What?" Dale nervously stammered.
"That was an interesting choice for the first meridian to open,"
Craig's eyes were inspecting the weave along Dale's heart and lungs. Dale was surprised.
I had a choice?
Of course. It is good that this is the one you used, though. The Hat Meridian can be somewhat dangerous to open once you get older. The initial hit to your heart can kill those that are unprepared or try it without help. Don't worry over much. If yours had stopped, we would have, of course, restarted it, Craig informed him seriously. There are 12 paired meridians, 6 yin and 6 yang. Then there are 2 single sets, the governing and conception sets. Those are what allowed you to formulate ki in the first place and were forced open when you were younger, usually at birth. You can reinforce them with your ki, and you should, but make sure we are around any time you plan on opening a new meridian.
Right. So, what just happened? Dale examined the group surrounding his prone form. I mean, I feel good, but I was bleeding. Did I hurt myself? Did I do it wrong?
You just strengthened your heart, lungs, lower intestine, and a few muscles in your arms. In practical terms, this meant that your endurance is going to skyrocket. The rate at which you heal will also increase as your body gets used to this transformation.
Craig imparted with a smile.
You did the job perfectly. As an added bonus, you should be able to see that your essence seems smaller, but in actuality, it is all still there. Some of it is constantly following the unique pattern you have created for it. Before you think that you can just do all of those different meridians in one go, please realize that if you go below a certain amount of essence in your center, you may die. Just do what you have been doing and you will be fine. You simply need to build up the amount of essence you have again before you open a new meridian.
A smile on his face, Craig then directed,
Now, from that meridian, pull a bit of essence to your eyes and see what happens.
Dale reached inside himself yet again, pulling essence upward. His eyes quickly gathered a bit of essence, and the light in the area became overwhelming. He squinted and was suddenly able to see the flowing essence in the other men. Their spirals were powerful, howling twisters that spun essence into smaller twisters that continued deep into their centers.
Wow!
Dale breathed. He looked at them all, amazed.
You see like this all the time?
Looking around, he could see essence moving through everything, the colors almost sickeningly bright. The best comparison he could think of was pouring honey on a massive dessert cake with creamed ice on the side, then trying to eat it when you were already full to bursting.
In the dungeon, yes? Out here, it can be a bit overwhelming. Practice this on your own as often as possible,
Craig commanded him.
Since it doesn't leave your body, there is no essence cost associated with this skill. All of it will make its way back to your center when you stop using it. Now, look at the men in this and tell me what I meant when I said they would all be dead in a few months if they planned on delving into the dungeon.
Dale looked at the unknown men, shocked at the thick corruption in their centers. The essence they had in them was stagnant, simply sullenly sitting there, festering like a disease untreated for too long.
Was this what I looked like to you all before you stripped my essence?
Yes. You were able to see what it looked like inside yourself. This is an outside perspective, which is why it looks a bit different to you. See that giant man over there, stuffed full of earth taint?
Craig pointed at the massive man they had discussed a few minutes ago.
For all of his bulging muscles and nasty attitude,
the unknown man had just punched someone whom had accidentally bumped into him.
Within a few months, your arm muscles will be fully reinforced with essence, and you will easily be able to beat him in an arm wrestling contest, or stop a blow from him as you would a child. Life lesson here. Don't forget, he will still outweigh you. Don't try to grapple with someone that huge.
Hans laughed at what was obviously an inside joke. Craig nodded at Hans, also grinning.
This is just the start for you. The more meridians you have cleansed and opened, the more powerful your physical body will become.
Craig glanced at Dale, ensuring he had his full attention.
I'm hoping you are beginning to understand the advantage you are gaining over the average person, but remember that in the Guild, we use this power as it is intended to be used. That is, to help a fellow man.
Well, those tricky elves too, I suppose. Craig reluctantly allowed.
Now, Craig broke into a smile. I wasn't sure if you noticed when it happened, so have an official welcome to the 6th rank of the F-Series.
The others clapped Dale on the back, cheering at his success. Dale grinned, happy that this day had turned out so well. They decided to continue walking around and possibly visit the new priest and see how his preparations to build were going. They walked to the shining lot, seeing Father Richard praying in the center. They waited a moment until he noticed them and sprang up.
Lovely. Good morrow to you, my boy,
Father Richard cheerfully called out, walking toward them.
Good morning, Father, Dale intoned respectfully.
Beautiful, is it not?
Father Richard gestured towards the lot.
Turns out that giant lot is now solid quartz. I thought it was glass, but was so pleased to be wrong. In an unexpected and fortunate turn, it also seems that this entire sheet collects celestial essence from the heavens and sunlight. I will be able to build a monastery that will bring people flocking from all corners of the world.
His eyes were burning with fervor, and he was wildly gesticulating.
Really?
Dale had never heard of objects collecting essence on their own. He decided to try his new ability, so he collected essence in his eyes and looked at the quartz. The entire clear pane now was filled with solid bars of golden light.
Ah! My eyes!
Dale cried, slapping his hands to his face. Hans curled his lip and looked at him piteously.
You'll learn, kid.
Eh. Oh, to be young,
Father Richard chuckled.
Anyone know where I can find a good builder, mage? Quarrying enough stone from the area to build this church would take a decade, and the craftsmen I've been talking to are all trying to sell me on sandstone. This place is lousy with granite. Why would I not take advantage of that?
We have portal mages that should be arriving in a few days. If you have the coin, I know a few I can recommend from the Lion Kingdom for a small finder's fee, Hans stated greedily.
They quickly dissolved into discussion while a young boy ran up to Craig, telling him that the spotter was waiting for them near the stairs of the dungeon.
About time. Those bookworms probably only slithered out of their tent because they were tempted with a new toy,
Josh muttered in a voice like gravel. He rolled his thick shoulders, making his armor creak. They meandered their way back to the dungeon, Hans promising to meet up with Father Richard again soon. An unfamiliar man was waiting for them, his slim frame raising questions as to his status as a mage in Dale's mind. He focused on the man with his new ability, but the energy inside of what was certainly a mage was so confusing as to be beyond comprehension, actually making Dale nauseous.
That's what mana looks like,
Hans muttered to Dale, seeing the odd green tint to his face.
Don't worry about it.
I hear you have a quandary for me. I cannot wait to begin, shall we?
The slim man raced down the stairs, bounding down them with no apparent concern for his safety. His words had an odd, slow inflection to them, as if each were savored before he spoke them, clashing with his rapid movements.
That's what near physical invulnerability looks like, Hans dryly muttered again to Dale. Really, try not to think about it. They are just too weird.
The team followed at a more measured pace, meeting the mage as he was staring at the door. They settled in for a wait, which is what they got. The man muttered, gestured, and studied a book he had with him. He peered at the stone, touching, sniffing, and even licking it once or twice.
Freaking weirdo.
Hans muttered, earning a glare from the slim man, who suddenly shot up the stairs at reckless, astounding speed.
What? Did I offend him, you think?
Hans nervously asked as the others looked on in confusion. They glanced up just in time to see the man suddenly jump from the rim of what had once been the simple crevasse opening. A metal object gleamed in his hands as his back arched, swinging downward with a primal scream as he swung a pickaxe. The pickaxe head shattered, exploding in his hands as it impacted the stone, the shaft splintering into sawdust from the inhuman force behind the swing. The slim man landed lightly, nodding sagely as if he had confirmed a great and profound secret. Lifting the splintered remains of the pickhead, he examined it for a few minutes before turning, exposing shredded clothing with untouched flesh underneath.
"Yep, it's cursed earth," he proclaimed cheerfully. "Not getting through that too easily."
He started walking away, humming, when Craig stopped him.
"Can you tell us a bit more, please? We have to report to Frank."
"Oh, sure. It is stone that has been reinforced with earth corruption, with the basic essence removed."
The man sounded nearly giddy at having a sample to study.
"Not easy to do, I tell you what."
He started off again, humming a happy song. Craig was turning red in his effort to remain polite.
"Is there a way through, good sir? There are many people awaiting entry to the training grounds below."
The mage turned, startled, as if he had forgotten they existed.
"Hmm? Oh, you can break it if you use enough mana, but I don't think you will find a willing mage. Also, it tends to drain all the essence out of whatever is thrown against it, so I wouldn't recommend trying to break it yourselves."
Hans was a bit more abrupt with the distracted man.
"Oi! How do we get in?"
"Well, I imagine you'll just have to wait for it to vanish. After all, it just randomly appeared. It'll likely vanish the same way."
With that unhelpful advice, the mage skittered up the stairs on all fours and jogged away.
"Frank isn't going to like this," Steve sing-sang fretfully, adjusting his bow and quiver. "I call not it," he shouted the last words.
A chorus of "not it" followed this, except from a confused-looking Dale.
"What?"
Dale looked around the circle of now happy faces.
"Thank you for volunteering to be the one to tell Frank."
Steve patted Dale on the arm, a grin on his normally stony face.
"Meet us for lunch when you are done."
They walked up the stairs and away, laughing at Dale's misfortune.
No choice but to be the sacrificial victim for them. Dale returned to the guild tent and waited for an audience with Frank.
Roughly 20 minutes passed before he was ushered inside to make his report. When he finished, Frank heaved a sigh and nodded, rubbing his forehead.
"Ah, I see. Don't worry too much, lad. We knew the dungeon was getting more difficult. Think of this as a short vacation before your mornings become far more dangerous. Now how about you?"
Frank looked at Dale for the first time since he had entered and did a double take.
"You already have a meridian open? Good for you, Dale. Congratulations."
"Oh, thank you. I didn't realize it was a big deal until it was over. The guys just walked me through what to do."
Dale blushed a bit at the unexpected praise.
"We don't advertise what a meridian can do because it is dangerous to open when you are not ready for it. Imagine someone doing that and having corrupted essence."
Frank shuddered at the thought. Dale did not comprehend the idea until Frank continued.
"Think of it like this. Suddenly, your heart is surrounded in stone, too heavy to beat. Your lungs fill with water, or the blood in your veins turn to fire. Bad, bad idea. Better to let people think long life and superhuman strength is a side effect of reaching a higher rank. We don't tell people until they are ready for it. Got that?"
"Yes, sir."
Dale was then shooed out, moving to go get lunch with the others. The team spent the remainder of the day training, the others taking turns sparring with Dale. Having only a bit over a month of experience fighting rabbits and mushrooms, he did terribly. Realizing the error in their ways, they began with the most basic of basics, teaching him the proper way to hold his morning star. From that point forward, it was decided Dale would take turns sparring after lunch with someone so he could become an actually good fighter instead of just a subpar stick swinger. Dale was able to fight for several hours and was amazed that he could continue without getting exhausted, as was normal for him. While he did not win a single match, he was able to continue until they called for him to stop, round after round. Confused at first, he finally remembered what he had been told about opening his heart meridian and felt great joy at the already apparent effects. Dale was overjoyed that this huge increase in stamina was the result of opening just one meridian. He was now ravenously awaiting the chance to see what would happen when the rest were open. He made good progress in learning to wield his Morning Star that day, but was nowhere near to mastering even this basic weapon. Understandably, picking up a weapon and suddenly being good with it wasn't realistic. It was a childish and lazy fantasy. Having proper form and being able to maximize your usage of a weapon took an obscene amount of work. It wasn't a magical appearance of talent. Even using a memory stone only taught you how to do something properly. It didn't hone your muscles and reaction times. It didn't allow you to bypass strength training and endurance building. Dale couldn't imagine how long it would take to learn how to use something as complex as a sword in actual combat. Whack your enemy with a spiked ball on a stick? Perfect. Even learning to use his shield as more than an accessory was harder than he thought it should be. Practicing without the enchanted buckler taught him that you couldn't just accept whatever blow came down, you needed to then angle it away. A heavy blow nearly breaking his arm taught him that you also needed to try to dodge at least every once in a while. Getting his legs swept out from under him, as he thought of all this, taught the very important lesson of keeping your eyes and mind on your target. Dozens of these small lessons began building into talent and huge bruises. When he could finally not get up on his own, weakly waving his arms in a sad little attempt to roll over, the men relented and sent him off to take a bath in the cold mountain stream, calling after him to ensure he cleaned his reeking armor. After dinner, they each sat together and cultivated their respective elements. Dale and Craig sat on a slab of stone, while Hans sat in the center of a ring of fire, sweating profusely. Josh was up to his neck in the river, eyes closed and shivering in the snow-fed mountain stream, while Steve danced around to find the strongest breezes. Wind was never in short supply on a mountain, of course. The next few days followed this pattern for Dale, disappointedly checking the dungeon each morning, getting beat on after lunch, and cultivating heavily in the evening. They woke up on the fourth daybreak to excited people awaiting the portal mage's imminent arrival.
"They should be here within the hour! I can't wait to see my kids!
A hot bath and a good meal in the capital by next week!"
Dale was a bit nonplussed at these swarming, cheering people. Were the mountains really so bad? A young messenger ran up to him and informed him that his presence was requested by the guildmaster. He followed the boy to the large tent and was quickly shown in. A large map and table had been acquired from some unknown locale. Several people were talking in low voices while pointing at the map.
"Oh, good. Dale, looking at this map, can you tell me where you'd prefer to have the portal set? It is a fairly permanent system once it is built, made of inscribed stone, metal, and gems. Very heavy. Large enough to bring a couple wagons through at a time as well," Frank offhandedly muttered. "Big-ass eyesore, too."
Dale joined him in looking at the map, pointing out a good spot. They discussed the pros and cons of the location, but eventually all agreed that the spot was a good one. Some campers would need to shuffle around, but it was easily defensible and at the top of a small hill, which should keep it in a good location no matter the weather.
"Good choice. Now we need to talk about how you can make a profit from this.
Frank began seriously. Dale, thinking of how good the guild had treated him so far, started by saying,
Well, I was thinking a standard lease would...
Waving his hands to stop Dale, Frank cried,
No, no! They'd love that far too much! You need to make a percentage profit, else you are making coppers on the gold here. Please, I'll help you make your argument for the best deal, so when they start making offers, demand a hard 10%. You won't get it, but take no less than 5% profit of travel cost, or they are robbing you. Remember, this is your land, and they really want to put a portal here. Nothing like a good training place for a prince or noble to make them grease their coin purse and slowly pry it open.
The evil chuckle at the end made Dale look at Frank a bit oddly.
I suppose that makes sense.
Dale was again confused as to why Frank was helping him make profit off his own guild.
You will need that money in order to stand being around them. You'll see,
Frank ominously promised at Dale's blank look. 16. A caravan of wagons pulled to the outskirts of the still-growing dungeon camp, and officious people stepped out, looking down on the dirty men that were surrounding them with loopy grins on their faces. With a sniff, one man moved forward to greet Frank, then moved into the guild's tent to discuss logistics. Dale was waiting for them there. Upon seeing him, the officious man curled his lip in a sneer.
"What is this fishy doing in here?"
the man spat. Strange, but when other people said fishy, it often seemed affectionate. This man saw him only as his cultivation rank, as such an inferior person that he might as well have been an animal.
"He's here to negotiate the cost of a portal in the area,"
Frank grimaced, making told-you-so glances in Dale's direction.
"Why?"
he scoffed, soothing away imagined wrinkles from his robes.
"How could a newborn like him understand the complexities of associated cost in intradimensional travel?"
More to the point, Dale owns the land around here, so I mean more the monetary cost of you opening a portal here.
Frank managed to get out with a straight face.
Oh, the landowner? Him?
He glanced disparagingly at the poor, sweat-stained quality of Dale's clothes.
I suppose we could say, what, 10 silver a month? A small fortune to the likes of you, as I understand it. Not much around here, is there?
He turned back to Frank like the deal was finished.
Where can I get a proper meal around here?
I was thinking more along the lines of 15% profit from all usage of the portal, Dale calmly announced, controlling his anger at this treatment.
Pah!
The man laughed aloud scathingly as he turned around, pretending he had forgotten Dale's presence.
Where do you find these recruits, Frank? He'd make a better jester than businessman.
Coldly turning toward Dale,
I'll give you 15 silver a month, and you'll be grateful that I bothered to give you anything, dammit.
15% and free usage for myself and all goods I care to take with me, Dale countered just as coldly, upping his offer.
I could incinerate you with a blink of my eye.
Please don't start a war, James,
Frank begged softly, thinking he meant figuratively. James sneered at Frank again.
I think we will just place the portal further away then.
He turned to leave.
Best of luck, Dale voiced in a dry tone while Frank chuckled.
A few 100 feet will not hamper my business any,
James claimed, suspiciously looking at them.
Then we'll say, I don't know.
Dale started, pretending to be desperate before laughing and looking him directly in the eye.
15% and free usage for myself, friends, and all goods I care to take with me.
Brat!
James roared furiously.
I just said I would move off the land you own. Surely the next landowner will be more open to a portal on his land.
Oh, Well, in that case, best of luck, Dale repeated. Also, please do not call me Shirley. The name is Dale.
James left the tent in a slightly confused but fully angry huff, looking to find someone who owned land in the area. Dale and Frank sat down, shaking their heads. Frank apologized for the behavior James had shown. Then they began eating lunch, talking about training techniques and cultivation.
Oh, and how did Dale like his team?
They were good people.
Oh, that's good. Any issues?
In a rage, James stormed back in, eyes flashing. He shoved a finger at Dale.
You own the entire mountain? That's bullshit!
It is accurate, though,
Frank mildly stated. Dale responded around a mouthful of sandwich, equally bland.
True, Guildmaster.
1 gold a month, which is the best offer I will make.
James puffed up, red in the face.
He was quite rude when he got here, wasn't he?
Dale ignored James, talking to Frank directly.
He isn't getting any politer. We are eating, sir.
Fine! We will set up off the mountain. Make people climb for a day. What does it matter to me?
James yelled.
Oh, I don't think that's a good idea,
Frank grunted.
I agree. A very bad idea.
Dale agreed that it was indeed a bad idea. In a high-pitched tone, James screeched,
Stop that! I am your better, F-ranked scum! I will not allow you to swindle me!
Eyes flashing, Dale rose up from his seat. Just my elder.
Good luck getting business, you elderly asshole. People trying to climb a mountain that is impassable in winter, which is a month away? Yep. A month. You know what? No. I like it here. I have no issue staying, and everyone else can goddamned walk. I have no need of a portal. I refuse your business. Get off my mountain. I will not rent my land to you.
Something very odd happened then. James began protesting, but his arms and legs turned, and he started walking away, screaming in impotent rage all the while. Dale followed, wide-eyed, to see what was happening. A group of people gathered to see the man grab a horse in passing and ride off, still cursing and shrieking in frustration.
What the infernal hell? Dale breathed.
Frank passed Dale a nonchalant chunk of knowledge.
That would be the effect of being the magically enforced landowner of this mountain. Any citizen of this realm, under the political rank of a duke, would be forced to leave if you told them to. You cannot force someone to stay or to do things for you, but you can obviously make them leave. In a brilliant yet uncomprehending move of forethought, you bought this from 2 realms, meaning there are 2 kingdoms of people that would need to obey the command you just gave him.
Well, damn.
Dale turned to Frank as he made a realization.
Hey, is that why you have been so helpful to me?
Nah, I'm just a polite person. I'm definitely this nice to everyone. Heck, I let random people into the guild all the time.
Frank grinned.
Then I let them come to me, the guild leader, any time they have a question.
Dale rolled his eyes. I get it, I get it.
A lady from the caravan walked over, eyes flashing.
What was that all about? What just happened to James?
He was told to leave the property by the landowner, ma'am. He was quite rude and insulted the landowner repeatedly. Trust me when I say that he deserved far worse than being told to go away,
Frank explained in an attempt to mollify the slightly glowing woman.
Can I get your name, ma'am?
Yes,
she warily released the mana she had been readying.
I am High Magus Amber of the Portal Guild.
High Magus was a title that meant the person was in the upper A rankings.
James was supposed to be negotiating the terms of a lease for a portal, but as he is otherwise indisposed, would you introduce me to the owner?
I would be pleased to.
He turned to Dale, indicating him with a wave of his hand.
This is Guild Apprentice Dale, owner of these surrounding lands.
She looked at Dale and nodded, realization dawning on her face as she took in his ranking.
I apologize for the poor attitude of my subordinate guild member. He forgets that we were all at your level at some point. His bias is well known and documented, and I hope to make reparations as soon as is possible.
She bowed slightly toward him.
I also apologize for sending him off my land. I hope it will not inconvenience you too much. I was unaware of the ability the contract gave landowners.
Dale glanced at Frank as he said this. Amber grimaced and shook her head.
Please don't worry about it. If he is escorted back to you to ensure his good behavior, may I have your permission to allow him back on your land, with an apology and some form of recompense from him, of course?
That would be very acceptable, High Magus, Dale grudgingly allowed as formally as he could manage.
Something about her screamed that formality was an absolute necessity. She seemed to disagree with his assessment.
Please, just call me Amber. How far does your land extend? We will need to get him from the edge, where I assume he is currently pacing and ranting. He will apologize sincerely within the hour,
she promised while rubbing her head. Obviously, she had a headache coming on. Dale coughed and blushed a bit.
It may take a bit longer to bring him back. I own the whole mountain.
Shock whipped across her face.
Ah, this also explains much.
She waved one of her people down and sent him to go collect James, with instructions to escort him directly to the main guild tent.
Now, Dale, if we could discuss the price of a portal setup, I hope James didn't cost us the chance to get a contract.
Well, the last discussed price was 16% of the profit and free usage for myself, my friends, and all goods I care to take with me,
Dale started, all business as he upped the cost again. Amber made a small choking sound.
More of James's anger is explained. I don't suppose you'd be willing instead to make a standard lease for the land?
She smiled weakly, knowing he wouldn't go for it.
I'm sorry. My financial advisors have all demanded that any business in the area must pay percentage profit. As I will be needing to pay taxes to both the Lion and Phoenix Kingdoms, I hope you can see my dilemma.
Dale told her very seriously. Amber smiled, getting ready for one of her favorite pastimes, haggling.
This could take a while. Do you have any refreshments by chance? It has been at least 3 days and a few hundred miles since I was able to eat a cooked meal.
They happily returned to their lunch, filling a plate for the portal mage. After much haggling and awkward silences, they agreed upon 8% of the gross profit, free use for him, his goods, and close friends. Happy with the results of the day, Dale then left to train with his group, earning several bruises and putting him in a bad mood from their scolding and his poor performance. He bathed and went to dinner, discussing better tactics and form with Hans, who had proven to be a good friend. As per Frank's orders, Dale returned to the guild tent after dinner, where he found Amber and Frank talking to a fuming James.
Of course he makes us wait! Probably stuffing his face with free guild food while he laughs at making more important people wait on his whims,
James was saying maliciously.
You really aren't very smart, are you? I really thought better of you, James.
Amber rounded on him, voice cold.
This training ground is a potential gold mine. Already the kings of the surrounding realms plan their visits. Princes and princesses will come here to cultivate so they can meet on neutral ground while remaining well protected. The elves are a few weeks behind us, for God's sake, planning to build a city on this spot, and you insult the person who can just tell us to leave?
She was shouting at him by the end of her spiel.
He needs us more than we need him. The people here would riot at the thought of losing their chance at portals,
James weakly rebutted, wilting under the powerful gaze of his supervisor.
Why wouldn't they just wait until the elves got here? Their portals are just as good as ours. They care little for our gold,
Amber exclaimed.
We could lose a massive investment because you cannot stop being a prick.
You don't need to worry about that too much. I already accepted your offer, Magus Amber. I try to be a man of my word. Dale let the others know he could hear them, striding into the room. He glared at James. I think that you are not welcome here, Mage James. You have been here a day and already overstayed your welcome. I don't know what it is about me that offended you so, but I will not tolerate insults like you are spewing. Not only is it rude for no reason, it is bad for morale. Due to my daily access to the dungeon, I am actually a higher cultivation rank than the average adventurer around here. How would these insults be taken by them? You're paying customers. James's face flushed red, indignation within him. Dale cut James off before he could begin a tirade. When the portal is set up, please leave. You are free to go before then, which is my preference, but I know that may really inconvenience High Magus Amber. She nodded reluctantly as he mentioned this. Also, if you plan to actually attack me or convince others to harm me, I need to ask you to leave, please. James, face suddenly pale, had his body whipped around, then started walking away, not in control of his limbs. He visibly calmed himself, taking a deep breath, stopped, and turned back to the group watching him.
My actions do not befit my rank. I apologize that I have acted so poorly. Please, allow me to make amends before sending me away.
Dale nodded, amazed at the change in demeanor James was exhibiting. That is fine, but my decision stands. I don't want to make an enemy of you, James, but I cannot allow insults like these. On that note, feel free to talk to me if you can find reasons I should change my mind. James nodded sharply, ashamed, walking out of the tent under his own power for once.
Well, Frank grumbled, that was a shit show.
Yep. Dale, head throbbing, took his leave and moved to find his bed. The next days followed a simple pattern. Early rise, get to know people, train, cultivate. The ground rumbled for several hours each of these days, not making anyone nervous as there was no shaking, only noise. When people were starting to become truly angry that the dungeon was blocked, and Frank had to punish a few people for fighting, the morning came that the door to the dungeon was finally open. Exceedingly cheerful, Dale's team alerted the guild. They got into formation and went to the dungeon entrance, ready to make some money. The difference in the room was apparent immediately. Raw iron coated practically every inch of the wall. The air was as thick with essence here, in the entrance, as it had been only in the boss room previously. With only a few violent mushrooms to make them cautious, they decided to take their time today absorbing the essence in each room, which would slow them down, but make them stronger. Dale's cultivation speed was so much higher at his new rank that they were able to move forward in a short half hour. Cal.
I may have allowed too much essence out, I noted to Danny.
Nah, that is totally normal. It's a byproduct of increasing your rank, than not having anyone pulling the essence into themselves. It was bound to accumulate, Cal. The huge level of essence in the air will vanish in a few hours, I'm betting. Especially at the rate this group is cultivating. Don't worry about them. Other people will be in a hurry to make money or get an item or two, so you'll be able to recapture some good essence,
Danny promised.
She was right, as per usual.
As my high-powered morning group cleared the second room and sat in the lotus position to cultivate, another group entered and hurried to get ahead of them, likely thinking that the best rewards went to the fastest group. They yelled some derisive comments at the first group as they passed, laughing at their good fortune whilst taking the left branch of the tunnel. They entered a room that had a false back. After clearing it, they shouted in anger that they had been tricked.
Heh. That was even funnier than I had thought it would be.
They stomped back, glaring at the still cultivating group like it was their fault, taking the branch to the right.
Are they all F-ranked?
Danny wondered, peering at the hustling group through our connection.
It looks like I'm feeding well today, I smugly told her.
I already was, of course, using my very useful trick of constantly pulling a few strands of refined essence from the group that was cultivating. This group cleared the room, joyfully